Well, the state is out of date, isn't it? We're going to check in with Greg Sams and your calls when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back. Gregory Sams with us. Gregory, what's crime like out that way?
Crime in England, you know, the figures are always being obscured. People accuse the police of understating crime. But the point is, you know, one of the things, of course, the police and the judiciary and the whole prison service, they prosper when there is more crime. I think that's one of the reasons we have so many victimless crimes on the books, just to keep them in business.
Sure, that's right.
But also, I just realized a year or so ago that cybercrime isn't even recorded. You know, it's called a notifiable offense. Certain things you have to write down, and they tally up the figures. But they don't do that for cybercrime, which has got to be the fastest growing area of crime there is.
Yeah.
And I don't think that the bank crimes for which they were fined hundreds of millions of dollars, they're not counted as crimes. They don't go into the figures. So we don't really know what crime is like, because the newest growth area of crime, A, from bankers, and B, from to cyber criminals, isn't even recorded.
And Brits aren't allowed to own a handgun, are they?
No. Even air guns are pretty restricted here.
That's an interesting take. You know, we have found here with studies that, you know, people who have the ability to carry concealed weapons with permits, crime goes down in most of those areas.
I visited a small town in Utah once with my friend Dan Patrick was living there, and everybody in this town was armed to the teeth.
Yeah.
And they had no crime.
No crime at all. I mean, I'm a proponent in that. I think that's great, but
English have a hard time understanding that, and I always have to point out why the Constitution said that we should have guns and well-armed militias, though I have to say I don't think those guns are any defense against the people in uniform holding guns.
No, not at all. Is that a concern? Are you concerned about that possibility?
Which possibility?
That uniformed people with guns, whether they be military or police force, would actually use them against people?
I have no doubt that they would. I mean, I saw a horrendous video of police in Albuquerque murdering a homeless guy who was sleeping up in the hills. Just shooting this guy for nothing. And I don't know if you have, do you have a crime figure in America, or a figure for how many people are killed by police each year?
I'm sure we have it. I'm sure it's out there somewhere. If we can,
because I looked for that and I couldn't find it. I was just wondering how that figures to.
I don't think
how many people
out.
Are killed by criminals.
It doesn't come out in the daily FBI statistics at all.
Right.
Okay, let's take some calls with you.
Okay.
Let's go internationally. First of all, we'll go to Sue in Toronto. Welcome to the show, Sue. You're on the air with us.
Oh, hey, great show, guys. I wanted to ask you, if you could outline what you saw are the phases that an empire goes through in its development, rise and fall, because I've been thinking a lot about the state of America and how it seems to be following the pattern of the Roman Empire, you know, the Chinese empires as they came and went, and just wanted to hear what you thought about that and what phases you see as characteristic. Thank you.
I really see the main characteristic part of it as being when empires are at their largest and most complex, they get the most top-heavy because more and more people are feeding at the trough, so to speak, and at a certain point, more people are feeding at it than the suffering populace can support. And at that, I mean, at that time, they collapsed. So the Roman Empire was, you know, they were invaded by Christian Visigoths, Christian pagan, Christian barbarians. America, it's got all its military might, but it can't go out and win anything now. They're just spending money on armaments, which is taking it out of the economy, of course, and wasting it, you know, because when you use guns and armaments, they cause even more waste than is spent in creating them. So I think America, I mentioned this in the book, that it's probably on the verge of collapse, and it hasn't got an enemy. You need to have an enemy or some kind of deeply based fear in order to maintain your grip on the population. And as we connect up with each other on the internet and we realize that human beings are human beings wherever they are on the planet, it gets harder for them to instill fear. I mean, we have the terrorism now. That's the last card they're holding. The war on drugs didn't work, but the war on terror is, and they're playing that for all they can.
Do most of the Brits feel as if terrorism's been created by governments to instill this fear and control?
The Brits are suspicious. You know, we had the largest anti-war protest or the largest public demonstration even in the history of the world, as far as I know. We had 2 million people out on the streets saying, you know, don't go to war in Iraq. But Bush and Blair, they had stitched that one up well in advance, and England went to war. Yeah, but people say, what can you do? There was no larger protest possible, but the state just ignores it and goes to war. And I think that is the point when they get that out of touch, and when they're waging absolutely meaningless wars, that they are on the verge of collapse. And I think we have to look at that sign and take it for what it is.
Greg, is there a concern that there could be another major war, a World War III?
Well, I was terrified when America was gung-ho to invade Syria.
Yeah, it almost happened.
And thank God that was averted by Russian chess playing against American checkers playing. But they're still trying. There are people who want war. They want disorder. They want as much chaos as possible because they're geared to profit from it. And they've got a handle on government, so they're trying to do that. And I really hope we don't get to that stage again. I don't think we will, but I'm
you never
also
know.
Holding my breath.
That's right. Dave is in Spokane, Washington, west of the Rockies. David, good morning.
Yes, Greg. I wanted to kind of talk about what you were talking about earlier and the governments and whatnot being overloaded. And the problem is, I think the problem is here in America is that we have these oligarchies that control everything, the oil monopolies, the coal monopolies, the banking, the Wall Street crowd, and they're the ones, the government actually wants to help the people, but unfortunately the government's been hijacked by these special interest groups. And I think that's the problem we're having here. I don't know if you have that in the UK or not. But another thing I wanted to point out was your future, your vision of the future. And I saw a movie about the UK, and I thought, and the more it wasn't a very good movie, but it was a wonderful movie, I thought, about what the future is really going to be like. And that was The Children of Men. Have you seen that?
I haven't, no.
Yeah, it's basically a social collapse. And the population collapses, and there's a social collapse, and everything deteriorates. Nothing gets done. The bridges aren't taken care of. The roads aren't taken care of. But things go on.
Sounds familiar.
Well, that's Hollywood, of course. Hollywood doesn't sell movies about peace and harmony. You know, our whole culture is on that. And I don't see that as social collapse as what might happen. And going back to your original point on the oligarchies, the corporations running the government, I don't believe the government really does want to help the people. They seem to be very happy with the corporations. They get to tax thousands of people at once rather than having to tax them all individually. And the corporations have lobbyists. There's three lobbyists for every member of Senate and Congress just from the pharmaceutical industry. But if you go back in time, you see the Roman Empire, they didn't have any Halliburtons or Monsantos. They were a nasty empire without corporations. You know, Saudi Arabia isn't run by corporations, but you can be executed for changing religions. You need a penis to drive a car. And homosexuals risk jail and execution. So, you know, somebody's always going to be more powerful than the individuals amongst us and influencing a state. Because when you've got a government, a thing that's institution that's able to take money from people and make rules, somebody's going to run it. When the church ran it, people were put in jail for not attending church or for blasphemy or for all sorts of things that, you know, practicing herbalism had women burned as witches. So I think it's really the state, that coercive tool, is the problem. And occasionally you'll get somebody nice in charge of it, but usually not, because the system tends to have bad guys work themselves to the top rather than good guys.
What happens to the system, Greg, when we do get that X flare that knocks out the grid, or an asteroid that plays havoc with the planet? What happens then?
Well, let me just say, I used to have a house in Goa in India just 20 years ago. I had a house there for 10 years. We didn't have, at that point, telephones, let alone the internet. We didn't have running water. We didn't have electricity.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that's what you would think. But life was bliss.
You got used to it, right?
Everything worked out. It was just fantastically easy life. You never had things to repair or breaking down. You didn't have to worry about people coming in and stealing all this stuff. And it was really surprising how life worked without that. And I love all the benefits of technology. I like all those things. But being in Goa made me realize that's not what life is about.
What got you there?
Pardon?
What got you there?
I had a lot of friends who were going out there. This was after I opened my shop dedicated to chaos theory. And I met a lot of people there who were going to Goa for their holiday, for their winter, to spend the winters there. It was connected with the psychedelic trance party movement. I always go to a lot of parties, and all my friends would go away in the winter, so I started going too. And I soon discovered why. And I soon discovered, as wonderful as all these tools of civilization are, they're not essential. Being a human being on planet Earth, we're all equipped to be that. We might not think that, but when we're in that situation, we do it. We exchange, we work with each other, and we don't turn into this apocalyptic, post-collapse civilization, depicted in the Hollywood disaster movies. That's not really how it is.
When you invented the veggie burger back in 82, did you end up selling the concept or the idea, or what happened to it?
Yeah, I ran that for about 7 years. And I don't know if you're familiar with the Peter Principle, but I realized I'd risen to my level of incompetence.
That's
and gotten
true.
Big enough. And I had plenty of businesses before that, so I knew what this point was. And I said, okay, Greg, go now while it's still going well. So I was actually bought by a subdivision of that huge American corporation, Archer Daniel Midland.
Oh, that's big.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you do well?
I did okay. I got a couple years in advance installment on my retirement. I opened a shop dedicated to chaos theory, and now I'm a happy author.
Good for you. And you're on coast to coast.
There you go. I'm on coast to coast.
Let's go to Joe in San Francisco. Joseph, you're up with us.
Hi. I was interested in your idea of the the sun and by implication all the stars being conscious beings.
Yes.
And this is pretty subjective. I've had experiences like that where the sun was something about the sunlight, and that it was very luminous, and an extreme feeling of joy, especially in the springtime. It was just a one-time experience. But I was wondering, and like Stanley Kubrick's idea in 2001, maybe all of us are stars, and we're evolving to that point. And I'm wondering if, because you consider the size of the universe, there might be, millions of planet Earths out there. And maybe there is some way we can connect to the cosmic mind and travel between these stars. I mean, on a physical level, it doesn't seem possible. I'm just wondering if you have any thoughts along those lines.
Well, traveling between stars, I'll sort of pedal back on that, but just to the sun, you're talking about your that seminal moment you had feeling joy in the sun. Well, and you talk about all of us being stars. Well, the actual energy of life, what's powering this conversation right now, is recycled starlight from our local stars. That energy is stored in plants or animals that eat the plants, and we take up that energy. So we are actually starlight being recycled as human beings. Trees are starlight being recycled as trees. So we're experiencing human beings, but we are, that is sunlight experiencing that. So when you go out in the sun and you say, oh, it's a sunny day, how nice, and it lifts your spirits, that's because your spirits are sunlight. There's this very intense connection with that. I'm not particularly interested in traveling to other stars, but they travel to me. When I look up in the night sky, and you look up at Sirius, you've got 1,000 photons every second entering your eyeball, being absorbed by your eyes. Now, they've traveled for 8.5 years for 91 trillion miles from Sirius to reach the back of your eyeball. They haven't lost any energy. That light came from that star to you. So I don't want to go to that star, but I want to soak those photons up and get a feel for that star myself.
I was in Oregon this weekend, Gregory, at an event, and got to see up close my first sequoia tree. This thing is huge, huge. It actually looked like it was looking at me. I mean, this thing was so big, but it's just, you know, when you look at that, you look at the magnificence of this planet, it truly is inspiring, isn't it?
It's all inspiring. It's just fantastic what life can do.
We're going to take a break, but before we do, would you give out your website for me and your two books that you've got out there? They're available still, right?
They are. And the website is www.gregorysams.com. The books are Son of God, that's S-U-N, of course, and The State is Out of Date, We Can Do It Better. Now, the Kindle electronic version of The State is Out of Date is under $2. It was part of my contract with the publishers. I wanted the Kindle one to be cheap.
What did your friends in Pierce say when you started writing books?
What did my friends in
your close associates, what did they think of your writing?
Oh, they loved it. I mean, my first book, people loved it. I mean, it really changes people. And I would go to these aforementioned psychedelic trance parties. And after a 6 months of selling my book, I had a hard time dancing because people kept coming up to me and saying, hey, that book was fantastic. It changed my life. And I'm dancing with some beautiful woman being disturbed by that. But that's life. You gotta love it.
All right. Stay with us, Greg. We're going to come back in just a moment. We'll take final phone calls as we talk about, of course, what they're trying to do to us. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, we'll talk about artificial intelligence. How smart is it getting? When we come back in a moment with Gregory Sams, let's take our final calls on Coast to Coast AM. Greg Sams with us, final segment. Greg, the Gaia theory, the theory that this planet is a living organism, what do you think of that?
I agree with it. And what surprises me is that it was a few years after James Lovelock wrote that book that I wrote Son of God, and just proposing that this much bigger part of the system was also a living organism. But I certainly agree with Gaia's theory. The whole Earth works as a unit in the same way that a rainforest works as a unit. It's an entity in itself, even though it's composed of all these independent pieces, building that order from the bottom up, without the need for, as important as it is, where the rivers go and where the trees and where the rain falls in a rainforest, nobody's deciding it. It works itself out. And that's chaos theory. It just shows us that things self-organize into larger orderly structures. But yeah, I think it's all alive, George. I gotta tell you that. I came to that conclusion after writing Son of God.
This order that's in the universe, this incredible order, was it created, divine intelligence behind it, or just a fluke?
Well, this is definitely intelligence. I'm not gonna say divine intelligence behind it, but there's definitely intelligence in it. And one of the dilemmas we have is people only see two options on the table. You know, the evolutionists who think it's a completely accidental happening, and the creationists who think there is some, you know, old guy with a beard who's designing butterflies and people and putting the mountains here and there. And neither of those really sit comfortably when you think about it. And there is a middle ground, which is that intelligence is an inbuilt property of the universe. It's slowly, you know, it's developing itself, and wherever we get lots of individual components together, you find they start organizing. This happened in early quantum mechanics, you know, saw electron plasmas acting as if they were living beings, just a plasma field of electrons. So I think consciousness and intelligence are inherent in the electromagnetic force that permeates the entire universe. That's what gives matter the appearance of not being, you know, 99.9% empty space. And it infuses the entire universe with light energy and different vibrations of the EM spectrum. And that is where this order is coming from. Not all planned in advance and not all accidental. I mean, the accidental thing leads us down crazy avenues.
Oh, it sure does.
Where you need the multiverse. Can I have a moment on the multiverse here, George?
Yeah.
That came about as an attempt to explain why this universe came out just as it is. And you need an awful lot of multiverses for one to come out this way. And if you think that 10 to the power of 50 is how many atoms they estimate to be in the known universe, 10 to the power of 50, then 10 to the power of 56 would be a million times that many. Well, they estimate 10 to the power of 90 universes needed for one to work out as brilliantly as this one did. And I say, hey, that's kind of a silly way around acknowledging that this universe itself is intelligent and knows what it's doing, but without, you know, one planner behind it.
Let's go east. TJ's with us in Albert Lea, Minnesota. Welcome to the show, TJ. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. I would prefer to call you Sir Gregory or Gregory Sams Esquire. You're something of a genius, though I would never eat a veggie burger made out of soybeans produced in the upper Midwest. They're so toxic.
GMOs.
Absolutely. Now, my opinion is that these people in America, my DNA and my brain tissue is predominantly Old Saxon English. And so I'm out of place here in the upper Norwegian Midwest. But these people got to quit voting. They got to quit playing chess with the enemy, the devil himself. And he just loves it when everybody goes to the polls and they play his game. So what's your opinion of that, Sir Gregory Sams?
Thank you, Sir.
Pretty much a genius.
The polls, voting, you know, most people vote against somebody rather than for somebody. They're trying to choose the lesser evil and viewing this top-down state as a necessary evil. So which one is going to be least evil? Whereas I'm saying no. I mean, this is what Thomas Paine said back in 1776 when he wrote Common Sense. He's saying, hey, we don't need King George telling us what to do. We can do it ourselves. But again, it was a coercive state that was set up to do it. Because it was small, it worked for a long time. But then it got big, and it got the same sort of puppet string pullers as everybody else. Yeah, it's going to the polls isn't going to change anything, I'm afraid. I mean, it might get you a better option than somebody, but we're often disappointed in that. You know, everybody thought, not everybody, but a lot of people thought that Obama was going to be a real breath of fresh air or something new, change, and of course, it doesn't. It's the same old, same old.
It didn't happen. Why do you think they were able to get away with all this, Gregory, so long? I mean,
well, you know,
it's been going on for years.
Pardon?
It's been going on for years.
It's been going on for years. Well, people keep thinking that a change of figurehead, a change of policy is going to make the difference. And that's the main point of my book, is that rearranging those knobs and levers, we've been doing it for millennia. We've had pharaohs and popes and princes, and parliaments, presidents, that's just the peas. But we've had so many different types of structure there, and they all end up collapsing. But we have had structures that did not have that top-down control, whether it was the Tiwanaku in South America, the early Indus Valley civilizations, thousands of years in Mesopotamia before the first wars and empires started, where people lived really happily, and we've got no archaeological evidence of warfare, clubs, soldiers, anything in those civilizations. We can do it. We have done it. And we've got the tools today more than ever before to do it again.
All right, let's go to Glenn, Easton, Pennsylvania. First-time caller. Thanks for calling, Glenn. Go ahead.
Hey, George.
Hi.
If Minnesota's east, I'm far east.
Far east. You got that right.
I can throw a rock across the Delaware River and hit New Jersey. I wanted to say that, Greg, I feel the compassion within this guy. He reminds me of Graham Hancock.
Yeah, he does a little bit.
I was going to ask if you agree.
He wrote the foreword to my book, Son of God.
Yeah,
he did.
For compassion for humanity and where we are. But you took a lot of my questions earlier, George, and I just wanted to, I came up with one. I wanted to know what he would think of how we would live in a governmentless society, you know, the world as it is. We need government.
We do need government, but how do you make it the right kind of government? That's the big question, Greg.
Well, I think we do govern. You know, we don't have any actual government controlling what type of shoes we produce or what type of music we listen to or what type of phone we communicate on. And yet those are regulated. They work. We evolve those systems ourselves, and we just don't appreciate that we're able to do that. And the areas that have taken over by government, whether it's health care or charity and Social Security, are things, believe it or not, we used to do ourselves. And in the 19th century, we had friendly societies looking after health insurance. And then people thought it's so important the government has to take it over. And they took it over, and evolution stopped because those feedback loops that connect them to the market were broken. You don't have that. You don't have a say in America on what type of health care you have. And people, you know, the big difficulty, of course, is crime. What do we do about crime and criminality? I've got a whole chapter in the book devoted to that, and it has something to do with insurance companies, because they are the ones who insure us against crime as well as fire and tempest and all sorts of other things. So they have an interest in reducing crime. They've got no, they don't exist on it. It damages their bottom line. So there's a whole chapter on that, because that's a very, very interesting concept. And then you get to the main function of government. Their main raison d'etre is to protect us globally from other versions of themselves. That's how they came into being. We'll stop the Mexicans or the French or the Germans or the North Koreans from invading you. And when you look at it globally, you see, well, they are the problem. That's the problem. We've got all these states who have to protect us from themselves, and we give trillions every year to sort of support them. That is the problem, and I really do believe that we can self-govern and do things that the state, they haven't evolved in crime control for hundred years.
Yeah,
they still put people in jail, lock them up, the same stuff. We've gone from the telegraph to the smartphone in that period, from bicycle to the car and the jumbo jet. Where have they gone?
Let's go to Pete in Rochester, New York. Pete, thank you for holding. Go ahead.
It's Keith. Keith in Rochester.
Oh, Keith. All right.
There is the problem of being too civilized. Where was the outrage, the uprising on the part of the British people when one of their soldiers was beheaded on the street in broad daylight in London by Muslim terrorists? There was a time when no population anywhere would put up with such a horrendous spectacle. We as Americans in both world wars counted on the British to be a strong ally. The British today, as I know them, would not stand up to a Kaiser or a Hitler. And my final comment, why is it the British are allowing themselves to be kowtowed into accepting from all over the planet peoples who are foreign to the British way of life that would take Britain right out of the center of its place in Western civilization? As I know Britain today, the very concept of Western civilization is scorned upon as being politically incorrect. And thankfully, there is a revolt on the right with a guy named Nigel Farage. Where are the British people in all of this? Why didn't they, where was the true calamity in the beheading of their soldier like that?
People were really outraged by that. It created a lot of public upset. People sort of threw bacon at mosques and did whatever sort of silly stuff people can do when we're divided against each other by politics or religion. I'm appalled at fundamentalism, but I also recognize that when we send out drones and bombs and incendiaries and we occupy countries in the Middle East and rain destruction down on there, and not even their troops, their women and children as well, they get freaked out about it. And that creates terrorism. It creates division between people, which is what governments thrive upon. And Nigel Farage is a very sort of extreme politician. I don't like him, but he's got his finger on the pulse. He says the right things. And the main thing is he's very different. People are so upset with the same old, like the Democrats or Republicans, where's the line between them, that when somebody really extreme comes on, whether it's a Hitler, that was his situation back then, or another fascist, or Nigel Farage, they say, well, he's so different, let's give him a try, let's try something else, because it's that different, hoping that that's going to make a difference. But it doesn't. I promise you, if Nigel Farage gets in, it will be just as bad as the current people, but some things will change. I personally don't want to be in the European Union. Neither does he. But I don't want people like him telling us what to do. That's not the solution. That's my main point I'm making.
Pete, thanks for the call. We'll take a few more here and wrap things up. Let's go to Alan in East Bend, North Carolina. Go ahead, Alan. Thank you.
Hello, Gregory. How are you tonight?
I'm great, Alan. How are you?
I was calling. You were talking about society's fixing itself and everything. Well, about 3 years ago, me and my wife and our kids and two other families that were friends decided that we was going to take stuff into our own hands, and we bought a piece of property, and we live as a we still live and pay our taxes, but we grow all of our own food. We raise all of our own animals and stuff like that, eat a pretty healthy organic lifestyle and stuff like that. And you was talking earlier about your Son of God book about the primitive people worshiping the sun and stuff. Well, a couple years ago, we also kind of embraced what I'd say you've probably heard of it, called Celtic Christianity, mm-hmm. that the Celtics, they kind of walked the life of Jesus Christ and something like that, but they but everything that God made, they manifest in. They didn't worship it, but they manifest in the fact of it being great because God created it. And there's a lot of people that look down on us because they say we worship the earth and stuff like that, because we believe everything can be used, but it can be used in better ways than what we use it today.
Yes. And I like, if you go as far back to the word worship as you can, to the Indian Rig Veda, they say in real worship, we do not just do ritualistic worship, but we try to imbibe the qualities of the one we are worshiping. And that's a different type of worship, when you connect and take in the qualities of things. And that's the sort of thing you realize when you go out and you're connected to the land and you really eat things that came out of the land very recently, soak up that pure solar energy, you learn from that. You learn from what the light is bringing us, and you become connected with your world through whatever mechanism you want to use. It's very, very good for us.
Let's go to Scott in Duarte, California. Scott, let's squeeze you in here. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I wanted to ask the guest that, do you believe that, you know, any of these, it seems like all these people that come along and always have come along, you know, going back to any great, so-called great leader or whatever, all the way up to the present, Obama, not saying he's good, bad, whatever, not judging here. I just wanted to say that it always seems to see a lot of pomp and circumstance with these people, but nothing ever seems to really get done in the end.
Right.
You know,
very few. We've only got 45 seconds to go here, Greg, but he's right. Not much gets done.
That's the whole point of my book. You know, not much gets done, but we get things done. You see how we evolve in all sorts of ways, develop things from, you know, whether it's Airbnb or jumbo jets. And we don't get evolution of state. It just gets bigger and bigger and bigger and takes more and more out of our society.
Sure does. Hey, good luck with everything, Greg. It's been 5 years. Let's not make that much time go by, okay?
Okay, George. I hope not.
All right. You take care of yourself. Gregory Sams, website, of course, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. You can track us, too, by grabbing our free apps in the Coast Store for iPhones and Androids. They're free. Take advantage of it. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, George Knapp, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safer.